Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business live in the studio at RPPFM. And I'm obviously not your regular host, Jackie Mitchell. And she, unless she's got like, she's been taking drugs or pills or something to give her this Barry White kind of action voice going on. But she's out today busily taking care of her own business. I'm Toby Travener, and you may have heard me on other Taking Care of Business shows as a technology and people influence commentator. But today it's my pleasure to be sitting in Jackie's big chair, and it's great to have your company today as we talk all things business. Now, speaking of business, today's show is proudly sponsored by eView Real Estate, and we thank them for their ongoing support. Actually, speaking of real estate, my voice is sounding a little croaky today because I hosted an awards night for one of the larger real estate firms. And I got to tell you, 90 pages of script is a lot of talking to do. But I did say I'd give a shout out to the Frankston and Mornington offices of this company. So you know who you are. It's nice to have seen you last night. And congratulations on being top performers as well. Now, today our show is based around what many people would call the most important asset of any organization, which is its people. And when we're describing people, it's the minds and bodies, the culture, the attitudes, the skills, and even the lifestyle choices of team members, the stakeholders, suppliers, and especially the customers. And speaking of people, of course, we've got some amazing people in the studio this morning as our guests. Our business experts are here to talk about how to create, motivate, and select an engaged group of people, whether they're your team members of your organisation or the customers themselves. So we're going to hear from sports and corporate psychologist Gavin Freeman, also known as the Business Olympian, and recruitment specialist Rebecca Jarvis from Match Consulting. But let's kick it off by meeting Tristan White, the CEO of the Physio Co. Welcome, Tristan.
G'day, Toby. Great to be here.
It's good to see you. Look, last time I saw you was a couple of years ago, and every time I actually see you in the press, it's about doing some amazing things as a company. Physio Co. has been going along now for about 11 years. Mm-hmm. What does it actually do? What does it specialise in?
Yeah, so pretty simply, Toby, the Physio Co. is a physiotherapy company, and we exist to help seniors stay mobile, safe and happy. And so on-site physiotherapy for senior people at aged care homes, retirement villages, or wherever they call home is what the Physio Co. does in 5 states of Australia.
Right. Now, what dictates senior? Because there are times when I feel certainly senior with back problems and things like that.
Yeah. Look, the definition we use is over 65. Over 65 is the definition we use. But you know what? A hell of a lot of our clients are much older than that. Yeah. In aged care homes, we're talking about people in their 80s and 90s who are quite frail. But keeping people mobile and independent at that age is a really important job that we have.
And it is, because it keeps their mental health strong when their physical health is strong as well.
Yeah. One of the defining factors of a quality of life is being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And being able to be mobile is really important around that. So that's what the Physio Co. does.
Well, it must be really gratifying to the extent, I suppose, that your team are so engaged that you've been ranked in the top 50 places to work now, under 100 employees, for the last 7 years, coming in the beginning in number 37, then working your way all the way through to number one top place to work a couple of years ago. I hear you got pipped at the post last year and you're number two.
Yeah, so Toby, we did. We started this journey of building a great place to work, and we're number 37 on the list as a small 20-person team. And we've grown and become the best place to work for under 100 employees, which we're so proud of. It's like I feel like we do such a great thing in the world of helping elderly people, but then having people engaged to really enjoy the work they do and then shout out and say, this is a great place to work, is a very proud and humbling thing for me as a business owner. But something really exciting happened just recently, Toby, and that is that we've now got more than 100 employees at the Physio Co.
Right, great.
And so we're over the 100 employee limit, and we're actually into the next category. And so this year, just recently, we were announced as the 12th best place to work in Australia for over 100 employees.
Oh, congratulations.
So now,
mate,
we're competing against the big guys.
Well, look, if I can balance things up, even though they said you were number two, the company that won, a media agency, is part of a global organisation, said that it had 97 employees but didn't count other functions like finance and IT and so on. So I reckon you were number one last year as well.
Of course we were, Tobes. And I appreciate the bias.
Well, can I also say there's a bit of personal coverage about you as well. I don't know if any of you have seen this, but you're the poster boy for Vero right now, because I've seen you on the side of buses and on billboards. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, I am, Toby. It's a pretty surreal experience to be in the city. I was in the city of Melbourne recently with my wife, and a bus drove past with my big 3 meter head on the side of the bus. It was pretty different. But look, I'm very passionate about sharing what I learn at the Physio Co, not only to help grow the Physio Co, but to help other people grow great businesses.
Yeah.
And I was asked to do a short segment on radio about 12 months ago called the 60 Second Mentor. And it was recorded in studio, played around the country in multiple different stations around the country. And then they came back to me and said, we've now got a sponsor for this 60 Second Mentor project, and we would love you to be the ambassador for our sponsor. So, yep, you'll see my big non-smiling corporate head on buses, on billboards around the place as well.
Oh, I reckon that's terrific. But it's, you obviously were selected because you represent something, and this is about creating an engaged team, an engaged workforce. How have you gone about doing that?
I think, so Toby, I can speak now 12 years in as to what we've created, and we've documented this, the 19 steps of what we've done at the Physio Co. But if I go back to the very start, it's actually to be passionate about doing something different and refreshing in the world is where I really started from. And so I chose aged care because I was passionate about it.
Yep.
And then I chose to attract people and treat people in a positive and respectful way because I wanted them to inspire me as well. So we can start from the small, very personal interactions that we've got, but then we can move forward. And to be honest with you, the most significant thing that any business can do, in my experience, to create an engaged workforce is have a clear vision of where they're headed. Yep. And what's going on. Because if no one knows where you're headed and what's going on, then how on earth do you contribute in a meaningful way?
So I've used the term the light on top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as everybody knows where the light on top of the hill is, a lot of the time they might take a slightly different pathway, but they're still moving towards that.
Absolutely. We call it the North Star.
There you go.
Same concept. And so we've actually got a very clear vision at the Physio Co, and we use it as part of our recruitment and selection and onboarding process, because if people are committed to what we're doing and they're doing what they can to bring the vision to life, I can't ask them to do any more than that.
Yeah. Now, but you look after your people. Once they're on board, I hear you've got this thing called happiness monitoring. What's that all about?
We do. We have happiness monitoring is important because we will not never ever have happy clients if we don't have happy staff members.
Yeah.
But we don't do it in a high-tech way. It's a very simple concept. We onboard people and then we check in with them, not only their line manager, but our HR department check in on a regular basis, ask a small number of questions, and to rate their happiness of whether us as a Physio Co are living up to our expectations of what we promised in the pre-employment situation. Because I feel like there's so many businesses out there who promise so much, but then they may fall down on the execution.
Sure.
If they don't check themselves and they really don't, I don't know, check in with their employees to make sure that's happening. So happiness monitoring is about making sure we deliver on what we say we'll do.
And that's interesting because it's not just asking your employees, your team, to do what they're meant to be doing, but it's you as an organization actually living up to what you promise as well.
Absolutely.
You've been known to say culture is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got another concept called random acts of TPC-ness as well. I gather that's part of it.
Look, it is. And so I personally believe, and not everyone believes this, but I believe that culture is everything to business success, because when you get culture right, you can get everything else can fall in around it. But the random acts of TPC-ness is quite simply, we've got passionate people working with elderly folk in nursing homes and retirement villages, and we think it's really important that there's a small budget available for them to do random acts of kindness or TPC-ness, either for their clients or for other members of our team. And an example of that is that we had one physiotherapist working with an elderly client and could not for the life of it get this resident to be able to buy or afford to buy some new shoes. And so Marianne went off to Kmart, bought a pair of slippers with a non-slip sole for the resident, took them back, and the Physio Co has a budget to be able to do random acts of TPC-ness like that for our clients.
Brilliant. Well, I can tell you random acts of kindness are what we live on at RPPFM as well. Well, that's Kelly Clarkson with People Like Us. It is about getting the right sort of people like us. And we heard from Tristan how important it is to find people and to encourage them, all those people with the same level of passion and values. So it's about creating and selecting an engaged team. Now it's time to look at how we motivate people with our business Olympian, sports and organisational psychologist, and a regular guest on morning television, Gavin Freeman. Welcome, Gavin.
Thanks, Tobes. Great to be here.
Look, now, based on the title of your second best-selling book, which is Just Stop Motivating Me, it actually sounds like we should be talking about not motivating people?
Well, it's an interesting concept because all too often we as leaders think we need to motivate our people to do stuff. And it was just great listening to Tristan talking before, which clearly he's not doing the motivating. He's creating the right environment to allow people to be motivated themselves. So, you know, if you think about it, I can motivate you to do anything. I can use a carrot or a stick or a positive reinforcement of some sorts. But when I leave the room, if you don't want to do that task, you're either going to stop doing it where you are, or even worse, you're going to kind of go back yep. to where you were before. And so ultimately, when we think about us as leaders, we've got to really stop motivating our people and really start to understand that it's the environment and the context that they're working in that enables their own motivation. But there's another piece to it, because the way we view motivation, I think, has changed over the years.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, we used to think of motivation as being this carrot stick, positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement.
It's like that. And I, with the greatest respect to my North American friends, mm-hmm. it does feel a little bit like, so are you with me? Yes or yes?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. But what we realize now is that, in fact, from my perspective, at least looking at the way we codify motivation, it actually, we're motivated across a continuum. Mm. So my argument is we're always motivated. We're just sometimes motivated to succeed. And at other times, we're motivated to avoid failure.
Yep.
And those two different mindsets drives different behaviors. If you're motivated to succeed, you will simply see failure as a stepping stone to future success. Whereas if you're motivated to avoid failure, you're going to do absolutely everything to avoid the negative evaluation of yourself, by yourself, or by others. And that then drives a whole lot of maladaptive type behaviors that we see coming out.
Well, it's avoidance behavior, I suppose. And although you're talking in the, most of your work is now in the business sector, mm-hmm. I would imagine you would have seen a lot of this in the work that you did with the Olympians in Sydney in 2000, Athens in 2004, and Torino in 2006.
Absolutely. You know, the last thing you want to do is rely on the coach being the motivator to, you know, to be saying to an athlete that rah, rah, come on, you can do it. And I think, you know, often we see coaches now in whether it's the AFL or NRL, they're nowhere near the field. They're actually sitting up in a box in a stadium somewhere, articulating a message down through runners. We've moved away from having to be that rah, rah approach and really helping those athletes identify why they want to do it. So the biggest element of building your motivation is not what you're doing and it's not how you're doing it. It's actually being able to answer that question around why you're doing something, why you're passionate about it.
Yep.
And if the individual knows why they're doing it, what it enables them to do is to see every facet of their activity, whatever it might be, being as a pathway to future success. So failure is dealt with appropriately.
It becomes a learning moment, I suppose.
It has to be a learning yeah. moment. And if it's not, and it's seen as a moment whereby you're going to get whacked over the back of the knuckles with a stick, then all you start to do is either blame, justify, defend, or deny all of your behaviors. Or even worse, you start to preempt the failure.
Oh, that's interesting. Have you seen that happen in a corporate environment?
Well, let me take you back to school before we go to a corporate right. environment. Remember back a day when you had a friend, and imagine me with my quotation figure
sure, yep.
fingers up now, saying to you just as they walk into a school exam, I haven't studied for this one.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, when they failed, they'll turn to you and say, I told you I didn't study, so sure. you can't evaluate my failure. But what they also do is if they do really well, is they then own the success in what I call the displaying superiority over others. So what do? They go, I'm an absolute genius. I didn't study and I still did really well. So that's that unfortunate insight we see in people wanting to preempt it. We see it in the corporate world,
yeah.
right? I'm too tired. I didn't put enough effort in. You know, I didn't study hard enough, you know, or
it's okay. It's not in my KPIs.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, or I was up late last night, so I therefore can't perform. And we start to do all these things coming through. And then unfortunately we blame away our performances. We don't own our performance and take ownership of error.
Yeah. Now, look, you did talk about how important the why is. Mm. And it's interesting. I didn't necessarily want to turn this into an Olympic discussion, but one of the things that I did see in the Olympics this year was how many of the Australian athletes were busily apologizing for their what they perceived as their poor performance. And it did seem to be that their why was all of a sudden not within them. It was about performing for Australia. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, it's an interesting one because, you know, the most successful athletes I've worked with in the past, while potentially to the media, openly will talk about the way that they're, you know, they're so grateful in representing their country and say all the right things. But when you really speak to them, it's not that they don't care about that. Their focus isn't on that. Their focus is on themselves. So what I found fascinating by like you, that commentary around athletes saying, I've let other people down. I'd really challenge that and question, you know, are they letting others down or letting themselves down?
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, what they're saying is I've let myself down because I've allowed the distractions to impede in my performance.
Go on.
I was going to say the biggest issue we face as a nation, whether it's in the sporting world or even the corporate world, is unfortunately people are training to race. We're not training to compete.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? It's about the technical skill, not necessarily the outcome that they're looking for.
And if you think about it in a business world, you know, everybody out there trains to race, i.e. they learn their skill, they develop the capability of what they're doing. If you're a physio, for example, you know, you learn how to be a physio. You follow the textbook, you get all those skills. But then you get a client who presents slightly left of what the textbook says.
Yeah.
Now, the difference between racing and competing is if you race, you will just treat that person as per the textbook. Competing is recognizing all the other distractions, all the other variables, and saying, how am I going to react and respond to this person based on the environment and the context of this situation?
Yeah. Now, it's interesting also because it may be you that changes the rules a little bit in order to compete better. I won't mention specifics, but I've been putting a major proposal in my business together where we've been completely transparent about everything, including profitability levels, and it sent my client into a complete flat spin because I don't know how to deal with it. But I figure if we're actually going to be business partners, the more you know about where I'm coming from, the better the outcome's going to be.
And often that's the case. My organization, we're trying our best to run on what we call value-based propositions as opposed to time and material based propositions. And a lot of our clients struggle with that as a concept. And so to follow in your example, we just went up in a tender just recently where we got information back from the organization saying, we can't compare you to your competitors because you haven't told us how much you're charging us per 30 second increment.
Yeah.
And so can you please fill out this form? And we went back and said, no. You know, what we offer is a value, and we say to you, this is the value what you're going to get from the work we do. Do you really care how long it takes us to do it? And they've now come across and said, actually, no, we don't. And what we find then is that, you know, if you think about the way our staff then are motivated to perform, it's not about them saying, right, you've got a job to do, and I'll pay you $50 to do that piece of work, but it takes you 4 hours.
Yeah.
You know, often with our staff, it's particularly our casual staff, is we'll say to them, we're paying you for the outcome. And I don't care if it takes you 5 minutes to do it. If it takes you 20 hours, well, that's your issue. If it
that's
takes
your
you five
learning.
Minutes, it's your learning.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of our junior staff who are now 3-4 years in, who they get paid for the job. They don't get paid for the hours that they put into it. So if it takes them 5 minutes, good on them. As long as it's a high quality, we're fine.
Look, you know what? I think the approach can be a little bit high risk in some circumstances because you're kind of standing your ground with what clients are looking for.
Mm.
But as we heard from Tristan earlier, if you believe in it, you have passion in it, you know that it's right from your point of view. There are some clients you'd actually don't want to work with.
Yeah, and you know, saying no to a client is one of the most empowering things you can ever do as a business owner.
Yeah.
Being able to say, you know what, I'm not just doing this because you're going to pay me to do something. But if I don't believe that you're actually going to take the process out, if I don't believe that you're going to believe what I believe in, then really we're not going to get the outcome you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, Simon Sinek said it brilliantly that, you know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to believe in what you believe in, and then you're right. And the same goes for individuals and companies who are trying to attract new customers.
So how important is somebody like yourself as a psychologist or a coach in helping somebody come up with the why? And I'll bring the example, if I remember correctly, you know, when you were helping the archery team, and being a keen archer myself, in 2000, Simon Fairweather won a gold, and then we saw a bronze. And then you, like everybody else in the Australian team, kind of got the, we don't need you for a while. And then more recently, you worked with Alec Potts and there was a bronze. There's a little bit of a trend there, like when you're working with them, they're winning medals, and when you're not, they're not doing anything. But I suppose what I'm coming from there is, how important is a coach to help people actually rationalize, clarify, and get their vision of their why in place, whether it's sport or business?
You know, the role that I play is not always talking to the logical part of the brain, the rational part that understands and can conceptualize it. It's actually talking to that emotional part of the brain, which unfortunately has no propensity for language. And the way I usually articulate this is and I won't embarrass anybody in the studio today, but, you know, ask the question around, do you have a loved one? And most, you know, people who do will gingerly put their hand up and say yes. And I'll say, do you love your partner? And they'll say yes. And then I'll say, why? And you get this momentary, And what happens at that point in time is the cognitive brain kicks in and provides you the features and benefits list.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to the actual answer.
She cooks me nice dinners.
Exactly. That kind of nonsense. And it all is nonsense. Because the real answer is just because. And yeah. then the same thing comes down to when you're trying to ask people around passion and their why, they find it very difficult to articulate that because it is an emotional connection, yeah. not a logical, rational one. And so trying to create, back to Tristan's point around when you're talking about happiness, it's an interesting concept because if you say to people, how happy are you today? Well, what's the yardstick they're using to define their happiness? So the more you ask the question, the more real you'll get an answer because they'll be able to reflect back on a previous happy question as opposed to just, well, how happy are you today? I've got no reference point for that. It's an emotion.
Yeah. Well, let's keep this conversation going after we see if our station sponsors actually can evoke some happiness and emotion within us. Well, that's the presets with my people. It's about getting the right people in your organisation. And before we talk to our next guest, we're just talking about how hard it is to get your values right, but also how hard it is to be able to change the system a little bit and have a different conversation. And during that break, we're actually talking about how do you get rid of customers and sometimes how empowering that is. Now, Tristan, you've done that recently.
Look, I have. We had a very long-term customer who we were very much aligned with in the early days, but over the years, our alignment sort of slowly and steadily diverged, and into the fact that we just didn't get along anymore. What they wanted versus what we were delivering just wasn't a fit. It was like we were batting our heads against a brick wall, and in the end, we ended up breaking up, and it was a painful breakup, but at the end of the time, we were empowered, and we got on with serving our customers, which we had a much better value fit, and it felt right to move through that transition.
It's a very gutsy move to do, especially as many small businesses, by definition, need to be opportunistic just to keep the cash flow going.
Absolutely. It's painful. There's no question about it. But I think we talked about the North Star before, focusing on where we're headed in the future. And if you're not focused on the future and you're just trying to survive, then the challenge is that you'll fight this internal battle forever.
Yeah. So, Gavin, what are your thoughts about this?
The one thing we always got to remember is your people will have a wonderful bull, insert word,
yep.
radar. And so if you as an organization radar.
Yep.
If you as an organization are saying, here's our value system, this is what we're doing, this is what we're promoting, and then what they're seeing is you working with a client who doesn't meet those values, they will interpret that as being you're not being truthful and you're not actually living up to what you're saying you're supposed to be living up to. So that'll actually impact your culture internally as well, significantly, when companies aren't portraying their values. The other place where it comes out is particularly during a crisis, where companies don't articulate and communicate with the media, particularly in a way that meets their value systems. Again, it erodes that internal connection.
People can see the lack of authenticity.
Absolutely.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I suppose when it comes to team members as well, when you're hiring and I suppose firing, that can be difficult in saying goodbye and breaking up with staff. But I suppose finding the right people and then keeping them is going to be something that's going to be important. And that's your passion, Rebecca Jarvis from Match Consultant. You're a consulting and you're a specialist recruitment consultant. Welcome, Rebecca.
Good morning, Toby. Thanks for having me.
Now, over the last 20 years in recruitment, you must have seen a lot of changes in focus by employers during that time. What's an example of what it was like then compared to what it is now?
I think people have always talked about culture being key. And, I think it's a really key part of any business. People are absolutely the key asset and the front of anything. Probably the key thing that's changed is how you attract and retain those people. I think that, candidate expectations have shifted a lot.
In what way?
Well, firstly, social media obviously has come into it. So in terms of, expectations, a lot of what candidates are getting is what's being talked about in social media. And that's from a business perspective, but also an individual perspective.
Yeah.
So probably for us, in terms of attracting the right people, it's about convincing companies to make sure that they're on message on every aspect. So on every level of social media, they have to be, and all of their people need to be, and the people who leave their company need to be on message as well.
That's Tristan's North Star again, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, that's interesting because it sounds like the candidates have some power now and they're being much more choosy about which type of organisation they work with based upon the organisation's values and so on. Do you see that across the generations?
Absolutely. And it's becoming a huge challenge for, I think, businesses today with all of the new generations coming through, and they do have varying expectations. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's about a company understanding what their values are and what's important to them, and attracting people who have share those values. There's absolutely no point bringing people into the business who don't share that and trying to build that in them. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, you go to a job every day, you're actually spending more time working with, well, at your job than you are with your family a lot of the time.
Yeah, well,
so
that's
it's
true.
Absolutely crucial that you're enjoying what you're doing. And I think, you know, that's where the expectations come in. But it, so it's not so much about necessarily keeping the people, but I think if you can find the right people in the first place, they're naturally going to stay with the business.
It's interesting, isn't it? I know Jack Welch many years ago got slammed by the HR community for making a comment which went along the lines of, you know, our role at General Electric, at GE, is to provide a challenging and interesting environment for our people to the point where we no longer need each other. And they slammed him for saying, you're just using them up and spitting them out. And he says, no, it's the exact opposite. We have to be a good place to work, otherwise they'll leave. And it sounds like that's the sort of stuff that you're saying. But you did say, how do you choose people? And I would imagine selecting the right person who looks right and is right is relatively easy to do, because, you know, you've got processes that look for skills and then the right culture. But if you're an employer, and many of our small businesses can sink or swim based upon who they bring into their team, how do you spot somebody who looks right but is actually wrong?
That's a very good question. And to be honest, I work with a lot of larger organisations in the IT industry, and I have been highly impressed with some of the processes they use. And to be, it's actually not about specific ticks in boxes. It's more about the incorporation of part of their team into the process. So you find, for example, with NetApp, they're an amazing top employer, been in the top for many years. If you ask them what they do to achieve that, they actually tell you they don't know.
Right.
And again, I think, you know, that was alluded to earlier, that it's more of a gut feel a lot of the time. And to, in order to sort of enable that, it's about involving various people in your business in the recruitment process, not necessarily to decide if the person is capable, but to have a cultural discussion or a discussion around, you know, what their values are, how they, what their expectations of the people they work with are, and share that back, you know, on the opposite side. So at the end of the day, you're bringing in people who share values and expectations with people across your business, not just with the leaders in the team.
Yeah. Tristan, have you ever employed somebody who was wrong but looked absolutely right?
Absolutely. I've done it more than once. It's not something we do as much these days. And I'll tell you one solution that we've got, which has helped a lot. I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Beck. And that is a multi-step process. So it's not meeting someone once. It's making sure you actually, it's almost like a dating game.
Yeah.
You spend time with someone, and then if you enjoy spending time with them, you choose to spend time with them again. And then you reassess, and you try to do it again, possibly in a different setting. So maybe it's an interview at one stage. There's a phone screen. Maybe an interview, there's a coffee, there's interaction with the team. There's actually we've actually got a 7-step process, the PhysioCo, to help us get from that what looks right to what actually is right. And so that's my experience, Toby.
I don't think we have to be quite as harsh as what Henry Ford was. Have you heard about what he used to do? He would take on a potential senior executive and take them to lunch and order soup. He just ordered soup as a starter. And if the person grabbed salt and salted the soup before they'd even taste it, he'd not hire them on the spot. Which is interesting, isn't it? It was all about, how do you know? Yeah. You're so arrogant that you think that this place, the soup needs some salt right from the start. But what Tristan's saying is quite... I'm just wondering, Rebecca, whether it's unusual or whether organisations are actually thinking like this now.
To be honest, I think there is a... It's a slow process. A lot of companies don't understand that this is actually a key part of their business, and they don't invest enough time and energy into it. So, you know, going through 2 or 3 or 4 meetings with somebody to them is a waste of time because they're busy getting on with, you know, the day-to-day.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you can engage people at the interview process and engage them across your values and make sure that you share the values, then that will be... an investment worth making. You generally find that those people will stay with the business a lot longer, and it's not a question of trying to get them to climb the hill to get to the North Star you know, it's a question of that they're already on their way to reaching it. So, yeah. You know, that's absolutely key. And I've seen, you know, I suppose over 20 years of doing this, I've seen a lot of companies who haven't engaged well in the recruitment process, and generally they're the people who are recruiting again in 6 months, 12 months' time. So, yeah.
Well, let's flip it on its head. How do you find somebody who looks wrong but is right?
Oh, have I got something to share on that
one? Yeah, let's go with that.
I'll share a quick story. I was at the Institute of Sport. You know, quick CV. I have a physiology degree. I have a master's degree in psychology, a bachelor's degree, an honors degree, and a master's degree in psychology. I was training elite athletes to go to the Olympic Games, building training programs. Could not, for the love of money, get an interview when I wanted to move out of sport and into the corporate world, into roles that were deemed training and development officers.
Right.
To develop training programs for corporates. I was continually told, no, you clearly can't do it because you haven't had any business experience. I went out and enrolled in an MBA, changed my CV to say MBA current, and got the next three job offers simply off the back of changing it. Fast forward 15 years, nobody cares about my MBA now. All they're interested in talking about is the sporting stuff, which is, I find, fascinating.
Yeah. So, Rebecca, you would have seen similar sorts of things, but how do you actually spot somebody who's, you know, face value looks wrong, but they're sometimes the best people to have as part of your team?
I think it goes back to understanding what your business values are again, and making sure that that's shared across your business, and that everybody involved and engaged in the recruitment process is on message from that perspective and is looking for the right things. And it's value based. It's not role based necessarily. So it's a question of asking the right questions. I think, you know, in 20 years of recruiting, and I recruit mostly salespeople and leaders.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I ask everybody is, why sales or why leadership? What is it that you're doing? You know, what is it? And so it's really just listening then to and peeling away at the layers in terms of what's really important to this person? What are they driven by? What are they motivated by? And, you know, just going back to what Gavin was saying, it's what are they already motivated by?
Yep.
And is it going to fit with the values of our organisation? And, you know, again, going back to the big organisations that I've worked with, Cisco, NetApp, companies like that, you know, they do it right.
Yep.
And generally, you know, they have some fabulous long, you know, they'll have 5 to 13 interviews. My record was 13 interviews.
Wow.
This poor man was just about to fall over, and I just, you know, to keep him engaged, I sort of pointed out that once you enter this business, you now have an automatic network of people who understand you, understand where they think your value to them is, and vice versa. And so that, to you, is going to be an amazing entry point into this huge organization. So again, it's giving them that, it's kind of like a home already when they get there, because
yeah,
they've already done the 5 meetings or
it's
whatever.
Almost like these people are working out during the interview process how valuable you're going to be, and once they already know, they're going to be using you as soon as you come on board.
Yeah.
Gavin, you've got some thoughts about this as well.
I just wanted to share another story. I was fortunate enough as part of my book to interview a number of senior execs, and one of them was a gentleman by the name of Greg Brady, who's the...
who is the father of 3 sons, who married another woman with 3 daughters. Is that right? Oh, no, that was a son. Greg was a son, wasn't
Greg
it?
Greg was the son. His role was in one of the very large banks as their chief internal auditor. And he made an incredible appointment to a role of an auditor. You know, you imagine what an auditor is. They're an accountant.
Correct.
Who goes in and audits a business.
Yeah, my computer has more personality generally. Yes.
And one of the roles was a lead role to a direct report into him, who was an investigative journalist.
Right, there you go.
And he got that approval through the board audit committee to put this person into role. And his argument was, I've got lots of auditors who know how to do auditing. What I need is somebody who can drive a different way of thinking in the business. And what do investigative journalists do? Well, they investigate and they learn how to uncover. That's exactly what an auditor does. So it was fascinating to see how he was looking at the diversity within his team and not limiting himself to just saying, I have to bring an auditor in. I can actually bring somebody else in to do a different role and use that skill set across roles.
So, Rebecca, I mean, that's a kind of a... out of the box way of thinking. What's your opinion as to how well companies actually do that?
That is so rare.
Yeah.
And I mean, in terms of the number of people who come to me with looking for somebody to fill a box, you know, it is a preconceived, they must have this, they must have that. It's almost like it's a safety net for them.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, we must have someone who ticks these boxes. But unless they fit the culture, it really is not going to take your business to where it needs to be, and it unfortunately is usually disappointing.
And so you've said it, that organisations need to be clear on this and then to articulate it. How good are they at doing that?
Some are good, more are not so good.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's about time invested. I think it's about actually seeing this as a key element in your business and a key success factor for your business, so that you'll actually invest the time and energy into it. And it's also about engaging your whole business to do it, not getting a team of HR specialists to sit there and write a model that is going to fit all. You know, it's actually about stripping back and saying, you know, what are the key elements of someone who is successful in this team, not necessarily what are the key functions and is the are the ticks that we need to see in a resume. So if you can engage the rest of your business in building that, for want of a better word, job description or person description or fit description, then that's a better way of going than just getting your HR people to put forward a prescriptive document, which is more often what happens, unfortunately.
Now, so many of our listeners are small businesses, and they are the HR person, the leader, the key salesperson, the operational manager, and the courier all wrapped up into one. And I know, Tristan, you started off as a small business,
but absolutely,
before getting to the stage that you are. When I'm taking on that multiple role as a small business as such, what kinds of questions should candidates be asking if they're being employed? And therefore, what sort of questions do I need to be good at answering as an employer?
I think, again, it just boils back to understanding clearly what your business is trying to achieve and what values underlie that. So it's about understanding then, I suppose, thinking through examples of why or what that means in the day-to-day in your business and what your expectations are of what you're trying to achieve and how your people add value to that. So it's really, and it's also being open and honest. I think rather than you're here to get a job from me and I will only tell you what you need to hear, it's actually about giving them the broader picture and, again, showing them why they're going to be there and giving them that breadth of understanding of what their impact is going to be on this business. But I think it's also, it's about spending time to think about what that really is rather than just, oh my goodness, I need someone to fill this job.
Yep.
And I need to do it quickly.
The average person's bull dust meter is pretty strong nowadays, and they'll see any crack in that transparency or authenticity. I'm sure you've been questioned, Tristan White, on a number of times with prospective people who want to work with you.
We sure have. And what we've found is that especially with very, very well-informed potential candidates, and I'm talking about graduates or people that are digital natives, they do their research so very well, is that you have to be very, very clear in the way you describe what the job will be. And for example, a graduate physiotherapist that joins the Physio Co, their roster may look like they'll spend a Monday, their Monday, once they settle in and have been trained, their Monday might be at a retirement village doing some hydrotherapy classes, then doing some one-to-one treatments, and then doing an exercise class. And then on Tuesday, they might be actually doing some home visits in people's own homes. And on Wednesday, they might be back to the retirement villages to do an exercise class. We actually get that specific in what the job will look like, so they really understand they can put themselves into that role and think, yeah, you know what, that does sound like something I want to do. Or, hang on, that's not for me, I'm out of here, and that's fine too.
And that's good to know right up front. Mm. And by the way, somebody who wants that level of variety in their work would love that.
Absolutely.
And certainly we're going to be looking at lots of variety when we talk about people who support this station. Well, I'm here with I'm here with the beautiful people from People Everyday Arrested Development. Thank you very much to that little intro back. Look, I've got to tell you, there's a bit of me that says if you had an organisation that ran purely on process and robots and production lines, it'd be a whole lot easier. But kind of a bit dull in comparison to working with people. What drives each of you to come to work? And that's an interesting thing, is I'm going to ask you your why question. And I know that's just off the bat here. You weren't prepared for this, but we'll see who answers first.
I'll jump in, Topes.
Good on you, Tristan.
Look, I'm obsessed by learning. And so my why is to go to work every day, to interact with people, to have situations which cause me to be curious, to ask questions, and which will hopefully challenge me to learn and to grow. And so I think that I get out of bed because I want to be challenged and I want to find people that inspire me to keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully do something useful in the world.
And do you reckon that the people, doesn't matter what their background, their level of experience, their job role, do you get inspiration from those people?
Absolutely. I think that I can learn from anyone and everything, but I can't necessarily learn all the skills I've got, but I need to look hard and ask good questions to get to the point which I find interesting, which will then help me to continue to grow.
Just out of interest, are you still hands-on in any way?
As a physiotherapist at the moment, I'm not, no.
Do you miss it?
Absolutely, I do. And Tobes, when I first started the business, I was personally treating about 2,500 clients per year was sort of the numbers that we're doing. And this year, our team will deliver close to 250,000 consultations. Yeah. My job is to lead that team as opposed to be doing the hands-on treatment.
Yeah. I was just working that out with approximately 220, 230 odd working days in a year. That's 10 people a day. That's a lot.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yep.
What drives you?
Me,
Gavin,
I'm deeply passionate about helping others understand their own why. You know, for me, the human condition, I find an ongoing fascinating insight and the passion behind that. One of the behaviors that's come out of me finding my why, which is wanting to not only understand myself, but actually help others understand themselves, was a transition I made when I started to get questions like, can I get a copy of your slide deck at the end of a presentation? Because often my proprietary is around my information. And initially I used to hold on to it. And now I find it fascinating when I say, no. In fact, I tell people to stop taking notes during an exercise because I will give them copies of it. For me, it's about, you know, can other people stand on my shoulders and understand their own why and then enable themselves and almost make myself obsolete. So for me, it's about that process and seeing others grow, and whether that's my kids or my clients, it's sort of the same process.
Yeah, it's terrific. Now, Rebecca, I would imagine one of the most enjoyable moments is saying to a candidate, you got the job. But there must be other whys for you as well.
I'm very passionate about the culture fit aspect of what I do. And I suppose I enjoy getting, I talked earlier about people being, working for the right company because you go there every day. And, you know, I've got many people I've placed in roles who've been there for 10 years. Yeah. And, you know, to me, and I've seen them grow and develop. And I suppose to me, that's what I'm passionate about. But I'm also passionate about, you know, I suppose working to my values and enabling that in everything that I do and working with companies who share those values. So it makes me very proud to work with a lot of the companies I work for. One of the big things that I love about the companies I work for, who are my preferred clients, are probably that they treat everyone with respect and as a grown-up. And really, if I can bring people into an environment where that's the case and they deserve that and they reciprocate and they're happy, that gives me the best buzz. The worst part is telling them they didn't get the job.
Yeah, but I suppose, as Gavin said before, it's a learning experience for the next one.
Absolutely, and I try and make it so as much as possible, although sometimes you don't get a lot of feedback. Yeah. But yeah.
And that's often, I think, the challenge for particular individuals, and you hear commentary around that all the time, around, you know, not getting that feedback and not knowing why. So sitting back and going, I don't hear back from somebody. And that, I think at an individual level, that frustration of not knowing why can be quite debilitating to an individual's motivation. If they get the why, it enables them to make those next steps, you know. And so I think it really is incumbent on a lot of organizations out there to support those, even if they're not being successful in those roles, or if they're not being successful within a role and being asked to potentially move on to somewhere else, not just to say it's not working out, but actually articulating that why, so that person has that opportunity to grow and learn from it. Otherwise, they'll be left with a little bit of resentment.
Well, then they can adjust accordingly. Or dare I say it, some people will just go, that's just rubbish. I know I'm better than that. Well, that's a different individual's problem. But most of us, I think, and if I look at the people in this room right now, in the studio right now, we'll go, if somebody gave you some feedback, you might not like it, but you probably take it on board. And I think for small business owners, one of the difficulties is the only feedback you get is somebody stops doing business with you. Nobody rings up. Yeah, it's too late. But they don't sit there and go, like, I'm cancelling my order because, you know, I didn't like the way you did such and such. They just stop doing business. So a lot of the time as small business owners, I'm looking for things that I can implement relatively quickly. So I'd like to finish off by asking you, what's a tip that the listeners might be able to put in place next week that may only be what I call a one percenter, but multiple one percenters can add up to a massive change to the business? What are your thoughts, Tristan?
I think the back to the comment from earlier on about happiness checking or happiness monitoring that we spoke of, and I think that It's my belief that relationships break down or disintegrate slowly, and it takes a long time, but they get chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. So we need to ask questions. How are we doing? How am I doing? How is our business doing? If people ask for that feedback and genuinely look people in the eye and ask them how they're going, we can avoid that breakup situation that we spoke about before.
And that's just not your team members. It's also customers as well.
Absolutely. So yeah. I'm talking about both the team members. You need to understand what drives your team members and ask them regularly to get the data like Gavin was talking about, and also the same with your customers. And my one other tip would be, we've talked about it all morning here, and that is you need to know what your North Star is. Yeah, you need to know your vision, where you're headed. If you don't know where you're headed, how the hell is the rest of your team going to come along the journey with you?
Great.
So that's my tip.
What about yours, Gavin?
For me, it's about taking that and considering the consistency and the authenticity in all forms of the way you communicate. Making sure that everything you do is aligned back to that same North Star. Because if it's not, people will see the cracks in it. If you say one thing and then do something slightly different in a particular small area, that's where you'll fall south. So whether it's the name of your business, whether it's your opening hours and you being on time when you say you're going to open, it's all those small little things. If you care about a customer, but you're not there at 10:05 when your company's meant to open at 10, that says a lot about your organization.
And I worry, I facepalm when I think of politicians and their ability to stick to their North Star as well. Rebecca, what's your one percenter?
I'd just probably align to your two messages. It's about really understanding what you're all about, both as an individual candidate, but also as an organisation, and making sure that you message that in every component of what you're doing. And, again, social media in recruitment is king. So you need to make sure everybody's speaking the same language for you out there.
Absolutely fantastic. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our guest, Tristan White, the CEO and Billboard and Side of Bus poster star, for the Physio Co. Gavin Freeman, author, speaker and coach to not only CEOs but also Olympians. And Rebecca Jarvis, cultural recruitment specialist. It's been an absolute pleasure hosting today's Taking Care of Business on RPPFM, proudly sponsored by the wonderful people at eView Real Estate. Jackie will be back soon with another jam-packed show full of tips, hints and fantastic ideas to help you take care of your business. And don't forget, you can also see here on Sky Business News on Tuesdays at 2:30 p.m. and also other episodes of Taking Care of Business on the RPPFM website. Just click on the podcast tab and listen in to some of the other experts that have been speaking in previous episodes. Look, I'll be back as a regular sometime soon, but until then, I hope your business has huge successes and that you're blessed with many, many moments of unexpected delight. I've been Toby Travener. We're going to leave you with an Aussie classic that represents all of our guests today, Aussie Crawl with Beautiful People. We look forward to being with you next Friday at 11 a.m. But in the meantime, keep taking care of your business.